The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. The Center for Autism and Related Disorders, the advice and opinion of a board-certified behavior analyst who has experience with autism before starting any intensive behavioral intervention. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
I'm muted. I was saying good morning, but I was muted. Good morning and welcome to Autism Live. I'm Shannon Penrod and I'm coming to you from my house. And we're going to have guests coming to you from different places around the world, really. Thrilled to be here with you this morning live on this Monday morning. It seems like it's been at least a month since we were here together, and it was only 3 days ago. So I don't know what that's about. We were just saying that the weekend wasn't long enough, but it seems like it was at least a month and a half. I will confess that my family, for the first time ever, we were the last people on the face of the earth to ever watch Game of Thrones. We'd not seen a single episode, not 5 minutes of it. And so we've started watching Game of Thrones. And so, you know, and we watched a few episodes of Game of Thrones. And I would not recommend that you watch this with anybody under the age of 17, really 35, but be that as it may. So I think maybe that made the weekend seem longer, but thrilled to be here with you this morning, thrilled to be back with real people who aren't waiting for the winter to come, and excited to be with you. This week is going to be big. Because we've gotten more information. You know, for a long time we were sitting on tenterhooks going, we have no idea what's going to happen in the fall. Now we have this much of an idea of what's going to happen in the fall. And that's movement, right? So we're going to have a couple of different shows where we're going to be talking about that. You know, today we're going to have Bonnie Yates with us again. And I don't even know what Bonnie's going to talk about because it's so interesting. And it is not a one size fits all, like everything else in the world and in life and in autism, right? That some of you don't have kids going to school at all. And some of you have kids that are going to be going back with no masks. And some of you have kids that aren't, you know, are doing distance learning. So it's not a one size fits all. We got to take that into consideration, but there's a lot to talk about. So we're going to do that today. And I just want to tell you that tomorrow on the show, tomorrow's big, like tomorrow's busting at the seams, because first we have two top researchers that come on the show once a month on Fridays. They're going to join us on a Tuesday because it's that big to talk to us about all of the research about distance learning for classrooms. So I don't know about you, but I want a front row seat for that, right? And then when they're done, we're welcoming Lisa Ackerman from TACA, the Autism Community in Action. And she's going to be talking about some pretty important things. I know we all were sort of celebrating that ADA turned 30 over the weekend, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And, you know, I just want to give a big shout out to our friend, Tony Coelho. And maybe I'll reach out to Tony to see if he's got any time in the next couple of weeks to be on the show. Tony was one of the original writers of ADA. Huge thing, turning 30, that's no small thing. So thrilled about that. And I know that Lisa will probably want to mention that, and we'll talk about biomedical, but they've got a conference coming up and they're doing it in a different way. For any of you who've ever been like, oh, I would just love to go to a TACA conference, but I can't physically get there. I can't, you know, and they have them in the spring and in the fall on either coast, but you know, sometimes that's just not possible. You got to be there with your kiddo. Well, this year for the first time, the fall one, it's going to be online. And so Lisa's got some information for you about that. And we all can get to this conference. And I tell you, like I would mark it down and be like, I got to go there. So on Wednesday, we have Dr. Grant Boucher back. Woo, how cool is that? And on Thursday, for the first time in a long time, we're welcoming back one of our original regulars, Dr. Evelyn Gould is going to be with us. When she was on the show when we first started, boy, she was a fan favorite. And then she left to go become Dr. Gould, because she wasn't Dr. Gould then, and to do more research and do more practical work in the field of autism and other related disorders and anxiety. And so she's going to be joining us to talk about her work with acceptance commitment therapy, and it's cutting edge stuff for the autism community right now, for both caregivers and for the individuals on the spectrum. So you're not going to want to miss that. And then for the next couple of weeks, because it's summer, we're going to be showing some oldies but goodies for the Let's Talk Autism with Shannon and Nancy. So I don't know which one we're showing on Friday, but something good, something really good, I guarantee you. So anyway, that's what the week is shaping up to be. Now, I remind you guys that we're live and we love to hear from you. We want to know your thoughts, your feelings, your questions, your concerns. There's lots of ways to connect with us. Our homepage is autism-live.com. There is a chat at the bottom, totally anonymous. You can write as much as you want. I've been having trouble accessing it, but we think it's working today, so you can try that. Can't promise. But I can tell you that you can talk to us live right now on Facebook and on YouTube. We are also live right now on Twitter and Periscope if you prefer to watch us there. It's just more efficient to talk to us on Facebook and YouTube, if I'm honest. But you can tweet at us. It takes us a little bit while longer to get that. But then later on, if you are wanting to watch more shows, or you're like, hey, I just discovered this and I didn't know this was here, and maybe they've got something about the thing that's, you know, really tearing my ticket. I just want to remind you that we've been doing this show now for, I think officially this week, we crest 9 years of doing the show. So that's a lot of shows, and they're available to you on our website. And you can search. They're also available to you on our YouTube channel. You can watch those old versions of Evelyn Gould being an expert on our show. You can do all of that. We've had a lot of amazing people on the show, so that's all available to you on YouTube and on our homepage, autism-live.com. They're very searchable. Put in a name or a topic or, you know, an issue, and you should be able to find a plethora of things that are there. If you don't find what you're looking for, write into us. I want to segue into that. We have a lot of experts on the show, but I'm not one of them. I'm a mom of an individual who was diagnosed with autism at the age of 2.5. And somewhere around there, I said, you know, in order to take care of this, I'm going to give up being a mind reader. So that's why you have to write in, because I can't read your minds. But I am a proud mom of a kiddo who was diagnosed at 2.5. And I am one of the luckiest people on the face of the planet, because I got the very best of what he needed. And I got that because I was lucky. I want to be abundantly clear. You know, if I know somebody said to me, well, you must've been very wealthy. this, like, nothing could be further from the truth, right? We were applying for food stamps. So not wealthy. I got very lucky. I happened to be living in the right place at the right time and meet the right people who sent me to the right people. And those people helped me to find people who would help us to fight for the funding. And we fought and we worked hard to be able to get the funding. And then once we had the funding, we did the thing and kept doing it over and over and over again. So, and part of that equation is that, you know, while on the day before, the day before I knew about CARD and the Center for Autism and Related Disorders and what they could do for my son, I was on my knees praying on our living room, or excuse me, our bedroom floor, and saying, please, God, help me to know what to do. Show me what to do. Make it clear, because you know how I am. And if you show me, I promise I'll do it. And not only that, if you help me to help my child, I promise I will help whoever I can. And this show is a living embodiment of that. I want to make sure that I'm helping you. Now, when I say you, who am I talking to? This show is really meant for the entire autism community. I mean, the entire autism community. And who do I count in that? Of course, individuals on the spectrum. That's the core. That's the beating heart of this community, right? And nothing, we don't do anything without them, right? And we want to be here to be an information and inspiration for those folks. But we also want to do that for everyone who loves those folks. That's, you know, moms and dads and grandparents and uncles and aunts and spouses and boyfriends and girlfriends and teachers and practitioners. That's all those people. We want to be a resource for all those people. So that's what we are here. We're saying hello to Christina, and we're saying hello to Chem Cosmos. Hey, how about that? We're thrilled to be here. So that's what we're doing. Don't mistake me for an expert, even though I've been doing these kinds of shows, because before this, I had a radio show, Everyday Autism Miracles, which those are still available. Those are still online too, if you want to go back to the early days, when I didn't know which way was up. But now I've had the opportunity to interview a lot of experts. Still, that doesn't make me an expert, but it does mean that I have an informed opinion, or at least that's what my opinion. But don't take me for an expert, but I'm here and I'm your cheerleader, and I want for you to get to the things that you want to get to. So put me to work. Let me know what you need. Don't make me guess was the whole point of that discussion. Okay. So on Mondays, before we get to anything else, we like to do something here that we fondly refer to as the jargon of the day. This is when we take on one word, one phrase, one acronym, and we try to figure out what in the hey nani nani are these experts talking about? What does this have to do with me? Why should I bother learning this whole new thing? Blah, 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 right? But we've found, or I've found, and many of us have found, that when we make friends with these terms just a little bit at a time, because we don't want to be overwhelmed, right? But if we make friends with these terms, we start to understand why the jargon exists, because jargon is there to be something that speeds things up. And I don't know about you, but when my son was in intervention, I wanted to speed things up, right? And my being able to understand what the experts were talking about sped things up. So eventually I started making friends with the jargon. So what we do here for our pleasure and enjoyment is that first we give you a jargon term, and then we give you the actual definition, often the textbook definition, and then I make fun of that. And then, whenever possible, and then we move on to a working definition where you have, you know, a mom explain it to you as best as she can, so that hopefully you'll begin to understand what the term means. Okay, so today it's an oldie but a goodie. One of my faves, in fact, for those of you who ever do an orientation with me, that there are families that I do group orientations and I do one-on-one orientations when they become new card parents. This is one of my faves to talk about, the three-term contingency. Doesn't this sound like something to do with how many years a president can be in office? No, that's four. And actually that's eight. So let's take a look at what the actual definition of the three-term contingency. One time I called it the three-term contagion. It's not that either. The three-term contingency in operant conditioning refers to stimulus control, in particular an antecedent contingency called the discriminative stimulus, SD, that influences the strengthening or weakening of behavior through such consequences as reinforcement or punishment. Woo! It's a goodie, isn't it? Because don't you just like hear the toilet flushing in the background as you start to read this? And you can't read it in any other way than with a good elevator voice, because it makes no sense, right? Let's read it again to see how many words we have any idea. Like most of these words, I'm like, okay, operant is always a word that slips through me. I'm like, I really don't know what that means. I know what operant conditioning is, but I don't know what operant is. And for most of you, bless you, if you know what operant conditioning is, then you've been doing this for 9 years too. And then stimulus control, what? And then let's clarify, in particular, an antecedent contingency. It's my favorite when somebody's defining something and they use words in the definition to define it. Don't you love that? Don't you want to go, no, use different words. I didn't get it the first time, which is why I need you to use different words. And then we get into discriminative stimulus, and then they're going to give us the abbreviation for that. And I just want to put my head in an oven. I don't know about you guys. So it's like, woo, got no idea what we're talking about. So let's move on to our working definition to see if we can't put this in terms that we understand. How about this? This is the ABCs of behavior. The three-term contingency, it is the ABCs of behavior. And if we can just remember ABC, right, we're halfway there. is a little bit more jargon because the A stands for antecedent, which is a word we're not as familiar with. But you will be. If you're going to stick around in the autism world and you're going to have anything to do with applied behavior analysis, and if you want to have your life be better, you're going to remember what antecedent is. So we have antecedent, behavior, and consequence. So what I do with parents all the time, excuse me, and this doesn't work well with this lighting, but I have just a piece of notebook paper here, and I know it's making more noise than anything else, but I folded it into three. I just folded it into three. Boom, boom, boom. Now I have three columns, and across the columns, I don't know if you can see, I wrote A, B, C. And as a parent with a child with autism, I carried one of these around with me everywhere, because this is what my BCBA asked me to do. And this saved my life. I'm not candy coating it here. It saved my life for a lot of different reasons. So first of all, my son would tantrum, right? And if you asked me on day one, before I started ABA, you know, why does he tantrum? I would say, oh, it is just random. He has autism. It is just random. He just tantrums because he tantrums. And I was wrong. You know, he was tantruming for very specific reasons. I just couldn't figure out what they were because I had an assumption, oh, that's autism, and that's just going to happen. That is a lie. If you look up the definition of autism, it does not say has tantrums anywhere. It just doesn't. Now, do tantrums go with autism? Yeah, because if I can't tell you what my needs are and get them met, I'm going to tantrum. And it doesn't matter how old I am, the more impacted I am, the more I'm going to do this, right? But even people, you know, if I can't get my needs met, I tantrum. So, right? And so do a lot of people. I'm not proud of it necessarily, but I'm just saying it happens, right? So then they taught me the ABCs of behavior, that everything that we do, every behavior that we do, there is something that happens before the behavior. That's the antecedent. And then there is something that happens after the behavior. That's the consequence. And if the antecedent keeps happening the way it's happening that caused the behavior, and the consequence is something that's, you know, relatively okay for me that helps me to get my needs met, then I'm going to do this behavior all the time because it's working for me. It's just that simple and that straightforward. As parents and as teachers, because I'm a former teacher here, we tend to be obsessed with the behavior. We're like, I don't want them to do that. What I want is for them to do this. They need to stop doing this and they need to start doing this. And we obsess on the behavior. The problem is you really don't have very much control over the actual behavior. You really don't. Like, we can stand there and say to someone, stop doing that. Stop doing that. Don't do that. Stop doing that. But, you know, if they're determined to do it, short of physically restraining them, how are we going to get them to stop doing it, right? And we don't want to be physically restraining anybody. That's not how we want to live. That's not how we want to parent. That's not how we want to teach, right? So here's the good news. While we don't have that much control over the behavior, we have tons of control over the antecedent and tons of control over the consequence. But the first thing we got to do is figure out what's going on. So we keep our little ABC sheet. And every time my son would throw a tantrum, the very first thing I would do is go to the B column and I would write down exactly what he did during the tantrum. Well, he started throwing things and then he started spitting at me and then he tried to hit me. And then, you know, he threw the remote at the television. You know, I write it all down. Now, this is one of the ways that it saved my life, because previous to this sheet, when my child would have a tantrum, do you know what I would stand there and think? I would think, oh my gosh, I am the worst parent on the face of the planet. This is my fault. And this is going to be the rest of our lives. And I can't handle this the rest of my life. And what's going to happen when I die? And it would just escalate. And that's where my thought process would be, right? And this helped me to be in the moment. What is he doing? Because I would remember that I had to write it down on the paper. Oh, okay. And now he's spitting. And now, oh, look at that. He's throwing something. I became a reporter. And that helped me to not be in that place where I was escalating it into the rest of my life, which is I'm telling you, when you're a court reporter, it feels much better than, oh no, the rest of my life is going to be like this. Trust me. So you write down everything in the behavior. And then you think to yourself, okay, what happened after the behavior was over? Like when he was done throwing the tantrum, did I give him lemonade and cookies? Did I pet his head and tell him it's okay? Did I help him to calm down? All of these things, which I thought were good parenting, but were in fact helping the behavior to happen again and again and again, because when I freak out, mom pets my head and gives me lemonade. I'm gonna do it, winning, right? You have to be humble and just write down exactly what the consequence was. The consequence was he got to have his iPad and he got to watch the, you know, the cat video that he likes to watch, right? So you write that down and then you go back and you're a detective and you try to think what happened beforehand. And you write down like what time this all happened too, and you keep a diary. And after every behavior, you draw a line and then you write more for the next one. And then you give that to the BCBA working on your case. I guarantee you, you, without being a BCBA, will start to see a pattern. You'll go, that's interesting. He seems to throw his tantrums every day at 2 o'clock. Now we start to look, what's happening at 1:30? Like, did we feed him red food coloring for lunch? Because some kids have tantrums because they have red food coloring. And about a half an hour later, they lose their cookies entirely, right? Or, you know, he's having the tantrum at 2 o'clock. Is that because the neighbor's sprinklers turned on and he's having to process everything and that noise is high-pitched and driving him crazy? Or did we put a demand on him and he was having fun? He had lunch and then he had a break and was watching cartoons. And we said, okay, it's time to pick up our toys. And that's when he had the meltdown. And so we're a detective, we start to look for what's in common here. And we start to be able to infer what it was that is, what's going on. But you really wanna be working with an expert on this, but I'm telling you, you will start to see a pattern for yourself. Because now, once we know, okay, well, here's what's going on, we can change some of the antecedents. And we can change some of the consequences. And when we do, there are so many studies that show that our kids learn and they learn how to get their needs met and they stop having to tantrum to get what they want. If I know when mom says, hey, we're gonna work on schoolwork, that we're gonna work on schoolwork for this amount of time and then I'm gonna get this huge reward, then I wanna work on schoolwork rather than tantrum, right? That's the three-term contingency. It is life-changing. It's absolutely life-changing. And it doesn't matter if you're doing this with your kiddo on the autism spectrum or you're doing this with your husband who's putting his socks on the floor and not in the laundry bin. Like you think to yourself, what is the behavior? My husband is putting his socks. My husband doesn't do this, by the way, but this is like the number one complaint I hear from wives. I am much more guilty of this than my husband is, but so my husband is leaving his socks on the living room floor. What is the antecedent? He's tired and he wants to get in the shower and he does what's expeditious. He puts them on the floor. And the consequence is that I nag at him, but it's like a gnat, right? So we can change that. Like you can move where the laundry basket is and put it where, so that it's easy when he's tired. Or you can change the consequence and, do all kinds of things. But the best antecedent modification for that is to thank him in advance for putting them in the basket and give him a big kiss and say, thank you for putting your socks in the basket. It's really great. My back's killing me and it's really great when you do. I just love you so much. Mwah. Antecedent. And then watch it unfold and he puts those socks. And then the consequence has to be that he gets another big kiss. Thank you. Oh, you just make me feel like I'm so special when you put the socks in the laundry basket. Oh, it's better than a dozen roses. And suddenly there's no socks on the floor anymore. I'm telling you, this stuff works. Okay. So I get excited about it. Anyway, let's move on because we don't want to miss Bonnie. So we always have a question of the day for you. The question is, how do you reward yourself for good habits? I don't know about you, but I'm trying to change some habits while we're in this pandemic and I'm, home more, trying to motivate myself and my family to do good habits. But we have to remember that we have to have rewards for them. And sometimes we get so busy doing what we're doing that we forget to reward ourselves for good habits. So what do you guys do? What's the reward right now for good habits? Excuse me. What are you going to do for yourself? I want to know. Can you write in on the Facebook? I want to know what you guys do to reward yourself. We're watching Game of Thrones. And we started a workout program, and the deal is we set a really easy minimum that everybody could do every day. And it's contingent upon all three of us doing it. If we have to, you know, do our 10 minutes of walking every single day. And if all three of us do it every day for 7 days, then we order PF Chang's, which is a big treat in our household, right? And we don't do it very often. So, but it's what's great, and a wonderful BCBA student taught me this the year before at Cal Alba, because she did a study on this, that if it's contingent upon two people, it's more likely to happen, right? Because as a group, we feel responsible, it's accountability. So maybe, you know, my son doesn't have a problem walking for 10 minutes a day, but he doesn't get the reward unless my husband and I do it too. Woohoo, right? And we kind of, you know, we don't have to guilt each other, but you're beholden to the group in order to get the reward. So that's what we're giving ourselves as PF Chang's, because for us, that's rewarding. Okay, moving on to our topic this week, which is very important for everything. Making it fun. And, you know, that's part of it being rewarding and reinforcing. We have to remember that if it's not fun, you know, what are we doing? Because we only get this one life. And even in this pandemic, you know, it gets into a grind, right? We have to find ways to make it fun. And we've got to do that for ourselves, and we've got to do that for our kiddos. We've got to change things up. We have to get more creative right now than we've ever been. Like, are you having a picnic on the floor today? Like, what can you do? And, you know, our brains are these amazing supercomputers. So I think it's just a matter of asking the question of every day, saying, what can you do today to have fun? And so I'm asking you guys, that should have been our question of the day. What can you do today to have fun and to make whatever you're doing fun? What would it take to do that with what you have to work with? Because everybody has something different to work with today. And some of you don't have a lot to work with, right? But there's always a way. Get your creativity hat on and say, what would I have to do today? And what would it take to make it fun? Especially not just for your kiddos, but for you as well. Because your kiddos need to see you having fun too. That's essential, right? Okay, so on the show today, as I said, we have the fabulous Bonnie Yates, who's going to be joining us any minute. And she is an attorney for the law offices, a Tolner Law Offices. But I'm looking, you guys have written in a lot already. So let's go through that really quickly while we're waiting for Bonnie. Good morning to Christina. Good morning to Kim Cosmos. Good morning to Amanda. And Kim, we're glad to see you on this platform too. Jacinda. Oh, she said, thank you for paving the way for us. And if you watched on Friday, Kathy Gott was here, and I was just so humbled by that because, you know, the generation before you is always the most amazing, right? I'm always trying to follow, and people like her, their snowshoes. Nad says, hi, Shannon. What is the chance of two-year-old nonverbal to speak if he does a lot of babbling, I'm thinking that you mean. If your child is making substantive sounds, then the chances are really good that your child is going to speak. But if your child is two, you need to hit it hard right now and get yourself good quality ABA and get after that. You want to be building that sound making. Usually, not always, but almost always, if there is sound production that is spontaneous, they can shape that into words, and then words can be shaped into sentences, and sentences can be shaped into conversation. It's a lot of work. Don't let anybody kid you. My child had been speaking, lost his language, and then he did 5 years of intensive ABA and talks like a magpie now, you know, and substantive the things my kid says. So it's worth it, but it's like preparing your kid for the Olympics, and you got to go all in. They're going to, at two, you want to be ramping up. So to, by the time they're three, you want to be at a 40-hour a week program. And everybody under the sun is going to tell you that's too much, that your child is too little. And I'm just, go look at the studies, go look at the studies. You know, we all were told that, but the people who get to the place where you want to get to did the full intensive ABA, 40 hours a week, fight for it. And let me know, and I'm happy to help you fight for it. Christine says, I'm really enjoying this as a behavior analyst. Ha ha. One of my greatest thrills is that we really started doing the jargon of the day so that we could all understand it, because we can't understand it when BCBAs talk. And I love me some BCBAs, don't get me wrong. But you guys talk and I just go, oh my goodness, could you speak English? Right, even now, I feel that way. And so we started doing this, and the high irony is that more and more universities use our jargon of the day to train their budding BCBAs. It cracks me up. And I get letters every week from students saying, oh my gosh, thank goodness for your jargon, because I didn't understand what they were saying either. So it makes me howl. We're saying hi to Nita. So thrilled that you're here. Good morning, Helen. Helen, I'm so glad you're here and so grateful for you. Angela says, hi, I have two boys on the spectrum. They are the complete opposite in everything. I'm looking forward to all the info you have. Thanks. From Halifax, Nova Scotia. Well, wonderful. So glad that you're here. And there is so much information on our YouTube channel and on our webpage. Look for whatever you need to find and let us know if you don't find something there. Advice for autistic people that won't wear a mask. I wear one, but I'm concerned for other people like myself who won't wear one. What should I do? You know, it's a really tough thing out there. There are a lot of people who are complying with the mask wearing, and there are a lot of people who aren't. And that's not autism versus not autism. So first of all, you have that there's people who are not on the autism spectrum who aren't complying and who have decided. I mean, there's just a bunch of bad information out there of people saying that it can make you sick because you're breathing in your own carbon monoxide. I'm just a science girl. My thing is, you know, I don't know. So I'm going to follow the science always. And I'm also very logical. And when I look at doctors and nurses, and, you know, my mother was a nurse, and, you know, I've watched people have masks on in emergency rooms my whole life. I've never seen any of them keel over and die from it or have brain damage, not once. So I don't hold much water to that, but I know there are a lot of people who are clinging to that and going, it's really bad for your health. Like our brightest and best doctors, I just, like, all of them wear a mask. I've never met a doctor who's like, I'm not wearing a mask because, not ever. So I think there's that logical aspect of it. But then there's a very big sensory component for the autism community. And I saw somebody that posted last night on Facebook, a pin that people can wear that say, I am not wearing a mask because of a sensory processing issue, please understand. And please stay further away from me to protect my health and your health. And I think that that's an important thing. And maybe if we could just say to the folks on the spectrum, if you really can't work up to the mask or aren't interested in doing that, it's not easy. Like, can we just all admit that it's not easy? The first couple of times I wore one, I was like, oh, I don't know. I feel claustrophobic, right? There is a sensory component to it. It's not, we need to not poo-poo that, right? But it can be worked on. And, you know, if somebody's willing, then the best, and we've seen this, I've seen some little ones that where the parent was like, it's never gonna happen. It is not gonna happen. But they followed a protocol and they got a mask that the kid liked. Then they, you know, they did it for a minute and rewarded them. And then they did it for 2 minutes and rewarded them. And now the kids are wearing the masks for an hour. So it is possible. I think, you know, I think we can get there with everybody, but there, you know, there's either got to be a willingness. And if we're talking about adults, you know, I think that the question we need to pose is, are you willing to work on it? Or would you be willing to wear this pin? And, you know, I'm all about adults get to choose what adults want to do, but you know, there's also legal stuff too. Somebody said, I'm autistic, pizza lover one, hello. I'm autistic and this jargon is confusing, isn't it? It's so confusing. I hope that, here's what I wanna say about our jargon is that I hope it starts to make it clear to you of how it would impact your life. And then you'll see that like the third time you hear the jargon after you've been out living your life and seeing things, now when you look at a behavior that you're not happy with, you're gonna look at it and go, wait a second. So what was the beginning of this and what happened afterwards? You'll think of it that way, right? Because absolutely everything we do in our life is that way, all of us, autistic, not autistic, right? So it'll start to make sense, but don't be hard on yourself if it doesn't make sense the first time. That was true for me for a long time. What if the tantrums are not to get something just because someone walks in the room or a sibling talks to them, it's over everything? Well, that's our subject about the four usual suspects. Usually when somebody, first question, is it a tantrum or a meltdown? So the difference for me is that a tantrum is when you're throwing yourself out of shape because there's something that you want. And when that's the case, there's four usual suspects with a fifth asterisk, right? The four usual suspects are that you want attention, good or bad. Attention, we'll take it, good or bad when we need attention, right? That you wanted access to someone or something, that you wanted to escape someone or something. And then the fourth one, the reason why we do things is because it feels good. And sometimes throwing a tantrum feels good, right? So it's usually one of those four. And when you do that ABC sheet, you start to ask yourself, okay. And sometimes, you know, the tantrum that they threw at 2 o'clock was to get away from someone, but the tantrum they threw at 3:30 was to get to someone. So each tantrum has its own thing, right? The asterisk one is sometimes to have control, that if I have no other way of having control of anything in my life, I will do something to get control sometimes. Now, so those are tantrums, but here's the real litmus test for me for the tantrum. If we're like, let's say that it's clear to us what the child wants. They're in the aisle of the grocery store, you know, that tunnel where suddenly you're surrounded by candy and magazines, and the child wants the candy. So they start to tantrum because they know that you're preoccupied with putting things up on the cart and paying and all this stuff, and you want them to be calm. And if they throw a tantrum, you're more likely to just give in and give it to them, right? They're smart. So they throw the tantrum right there. But it's clear, you know, they want candy, right? And by the way, don't give it to them, because what you're telling them is, please throw a tantrum every time we're in the grocery store, because that's how you get your paycheck, which is your candy, right? But the point here is when it's a meltdown, it's that even if you gave them the thing that they wanted, they're still flipping out. And when it's a meltdown, it's because there's some other component, usually sensory, on top of that. You know, I'm allergic to wheat. And if you give me wheat and anything goes wrong, I am inconsolable. And even if you fix it, I can't, because, you know, I'm breaking out in hives and I'm hot and I'm a mess, right? Sometimes our kids will have a tantrum because of something in the environment or a tag in their shirt. They want something, but then they just get into this mode. So I think you got to look at it. Now, are we talking about a tantrum or a meltdown? And then if it's a tantrum, think about those four usual suspects. Keep a sheet. Don't guess. Just start keeping a sheet. You know, you take the data. I never was into the data, but on this sheet, it's really amazing. And every time, write down and you'll start to see a pattern emerge. And maybe there's two separate patterns. It's like, oh, well, in the morning, he has a tantrum over this. And maybe it is that a person comes in the room and they know what that means. Oh, the therapist came in the room and now they're going to make me work, which means I don't get to play with my Legos, right? So it could be that. But there is a reason. There is a reason, one way or the other. We tend to discipline the tantrums as he's aggressive and hurts others and us. So how is that helping him get what he wants? Well, if he wanted attention, if I want attention and I'm trying very hard to get your attention and you don't give it to me and I throw a tantrum and you punish me, and while you're doing it, you say, you know, we don't do that. We don't hit your brother. I got attention. I have your undivided attention. And remember that with attention, we all have an attention bucket, right? And some of us have a well, and others have, you know, a little Dixie cup, right? But everybody needs attention to go into whatever their bucket is. When I used to teach, I thought of all of my kids as being buckets, and you got to keep those buckets topped off, because kids will do all kinds of things to get attention. And in the beginning, some kids are really interested in getting good attention and praise, but a lot of kids don't care. They're just like, I want to have your attention. I want to be the focus of attention. So just know that they are getting a paycheck one way or the other. And it may be attention, or it may be that, you know, you say to them, okay, that's it. You don't get to play. You have to go to your room. Well, that's what they wanted to begin with. Maybe that was too loud in the room, and they know the only way I get to go play in my room by myself is if I hit my sister, and then my parents give me a bunch of attention and put me in my room where I get to be by myself and it's quiet. Trust me, there's a paycheck. There is a paycheck, but keep that sheet and you'll start to see. Or back in the late 90s, early 2000s, watching the VHS of Sesame Street that you like. I don't know which, Pizza Lover, I don't know which comment that went with, so I apologize. And somebody said, can you email my son's issues and tantrums don't seem to fit this idea, and we are a total loss of how to handle it. Yeah, I'm going to give you my email. Okay. So my email is s.penrod@autism-live.com. s.penrod@autism-live.com. Okay. We have a few more questions, but Bonnie is here. So, Ms. Bonnie, how are you? We are not hearing you yet. But as I mentioned before, Bonnie is a lawyer.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you?
Is the AC noise too loud? Should I turn it off?
No, I'm not hearing anything at all. So
Okay, good.
You're fine. But Bonnie, how are you?
I'm good.
Okay, so we've got a little bit, we've got about 15 minutes here. So tell them really quickly about Tolner Law Offices.
Tolner Law Offices is an 8-attorney special education firm. We cover all of Southern California. We do all disabilities. We do IP. We do, you know, due process, regional center. We do ADA and 504 and university cases. And a little bit of other stuff too as it comes up. So some stuff did come up. I know you yes. said you have questions or no?
Well, everybody has questions, but it all stems around the same thing. It's just different circumstances. Everybody okay. wants to know what to do now that they know what's happening with school.
Well, okay.
Basically,
first of all, I would say I don't know what's happening, because I don't believe that any set of circumstances we've had has remained the same black letter consistent policy for more than 2 weeks. But I will talk about some stuff that's come up recently. I don't know that it's going to get any traction, but apparently President Trump said that he's going to ask for Congress to let federal funds follow each child to private school if public schools aren't open. So I'm trying to decide how I feel about that. That's kind of interesting. Also hearing that school districts are reaching out to the federal government asking for protective legislation, because they're anticipating an unprecedented amount of litigation as a result of school closure. Talked with a friend of mine this morning who's an attorney on the other side, who I like a lot and respect a lot. And she said, it's never gonna come to pass that the federal government will give those kinds of idea protections. That's her take on things. Had a question over the weekend about retention, which I've gotten asked about from time to time over the years, and districts have always been negative on the subject of retention. I'm finding some more willingness now for districts to consider retention, and there are pros and cons in terms of retention sort of as a remedy, if you will. Retention became disfavored because it was being used as a way to sort of get around having an IEP that hadn't provided FAPE, because if it had, you wouldn't have had to be retained. That didn't really take into account, let's say, the fact that some kids with autism just developmentally needed another year, maybe more of same, maybe, you know, let's say another year of kindergarten where it's not so academic and you have social time kind of, you know, at the top of the agenda. But anyway, there's a lot of reasons why retention is disfavored, mainly because it's supposed to not be a substitute for a good solid IEP. But some parents now are asking about retention. It's going to be on a case-by-case basis, but I wanted to let everybody know that, you know, that there's more willingness, more flexibility. School districts are also sometimes, you know, throwing up their hands and caving. I had a mediation last week that, for reasons I can't really go into here, I thought they were going to give me a lot of pushback, and instead they said, okay, you got your receipts, you want reimbursement for that placement, and you want the distance learning program that your placement offers for fall 2020-21 school year. And, you know, without kind of making it obvious that my jaw was on the ground, I said yes. And I realized that, you know, they have no choice in a lot of situations, and they realize that they have no choice. So that might work to the advantage of some of you who want a residential placement or a non-public or a private school. In terms of what folks are doing in light of the announcement in California that many schools are going to be closed, and I'm not looking at it as indefinite, as, you know, 2 weeks, 4 weeks. I'm looking at it as first semester, for better, for worse, just given the way the infection is progressing in the state. So as you said at the beginning, people want to know what to do in light of their individual circumstances. So the analysis, as far as I'm concerned, is what did your IEP provide for? What did your distance learning plan provide for? What did you actually get? How did your child respond to that? Did your child lose skills and lose ground? If so, can you prove it? What kind of documentation do you have? What ways do you have to quantify the regression? And then you write a letter to the district. You tell them what you need for fall. You give them a time frame in which to respond. And when they don't respond, you file for due process to get compensatory education. If you're paying for compensatory education now, you need to give 10 business days notice if you want to sue for reimbursement. You have to do that. You just get out the calendar and count 10 business days. You write them a letter. You send it to the assistant principal of the school. You tell them why their offer wasn't FAPE and it wasn't appropriate during distance learning. And you give them your reasons for choosing the other alternative. And once you give them the 10 business days notice, although they have the option to convene an IEP meeting and try to offer you FAPE, it's unlikely that that will happen. And then you will have the ability, assuming the school district doesn't respond, to wait until your child has made progress in the private setting, and then you can sue for reimbursement. So that's sort of the larger template that, you know, I'm going to customize to your individual circumstances, you know, depending on the specific facts of your case and what kind of, you know, data you have. I was saying all spring, you know, people, please, you know, here's a cheat sheet for how to collect data on what you were supposed to get versus what you got, and, you know, and please note, you know, any progression or regression. And this is the reason why I was doing that. You know, I was waiting for now. So we can take more questions about that on the air. I can take specific questions about that off the air. The other question I got on Friday that I just did a little looking into, if we have time, we could talk about it, or we could save it for another show if you have other things you want to talk about.
No, go ahead.
I had a parent contact me and say that their child was in a truly private school, not a non-public school, and they disclosed her child's IEP to a number of people without her permission, and she wanted to know what her remedies were. So I figured I should do a little something for Autism Live on FERPA, the Federal Educational Records and Privacy Act. And so I've done that and I'm gonna talk to you about it, but I wanna tell you first, the question I didn't really answer is what right of action does she have as a private school parent? Because according to the research I did, you can't sue under FERPA if you're a private school student, unless the entity receives funds from the federal government. So then the question is, you know, like what other privacy statutes would she be able to potentially use to sue, and, you know, how good are her damages? And I really haven't finished the research, but I did learn some stuff about FERPA. So one of the things I learned about FERPA is that if you are, or your child is, your student is subjected to an unauthorized release of your privacy records and you're covered by FERPA, you have to bring a complaint within 180 days of the incident. So I sent you, Shannon, a little, just a website for people if they want to go and look at the U.S. Department of Education's FERPA resources. And then if we have time and you want to, we could talk about FERPA some more.
Yeah, let's, because, you know, I think we all, I guess I'm a little naive, let's say that. Because I understand that my child has the right to privacy. And I can think of a very specific time a few years ago when somebody very publicly came up to us at a farmer's market, and they were actually visiting. We were at a booth at a farmer's market. There were probably 100 people standing around, and it was her sibling that it was their booth. And we had gone to this farmer's market booth forever, and my son would have conversations with the woman. Well, now the sister is there, and she said, "Oh my goodness," and said his name, and you know, and said, "Oh, I didn't know you were here." And then the woman said, "How do you know him?" And she said, "Oh, you know, well, I know him because I work with him at his school. He's in the, you know, the autism program, and I'm not his aide, so-and-so is his aide," but said all of these things out loud. And I said, and she didn't, you know, and then I think eventually she didn't catch on, but then eventually I said, "Stop." And, you know, and everybody said to me, I should have filed a complaint. I should have done, but,
well, that's a different situation, because that's a right of action against a private citizen. That's even, you know, less potentially meaty than suing a private school.
So what, tell us, like, what circumstances that we would need to file a FERPA? When would we do this? Why would we do this?
Well, you would do it if the state educational agency released records of your child's or the student's without your permission. Okay, so
how would we know that they did that, I guess, is my next
question. Well, okay, so I had a case a couple years ago where the kiddo went on Canvas, and apparently there was a page on Canvas that talked about her IEP and her diagnoses, and she found out she had autism.
Oh my goodness.
She was a teenager. She had no idea she had autism, and this occasioned a huge psychological uproar, because all of a sudden she's dealing with, and that was part one of the case. Part two of the case was that the special ed teacher decided that it would be a good exercise for the students to learn about their accommodations. So she brought a copy of each kid's IEP to the learning center, whatever the class was, the special day class. And she handed out like these 8 IEPs, and then she had each kid reading their accommodations from their IEPs.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So,
that was a teacher that had been around a long time.
Wow.
And
she made no attempt to like redact who they were?
No, that case settled. And, you know, and at the time, the parent and I thought that the amount of money that we were offered reflected a concern about that part of the case, maybe more than just the due process part. So that would be, those are experiences that I've had within the last year and a half.
Wow. Okay. I'm just always gobsmacked by stupidity. Okay. All right. So, and I've just sent over to Traven what you sent. So Traven, maybe you can put the link in the Facebook comments, for what Bonnie sent us, and explain a little bit what that link takes us to, Bonnie.
Yeah. What that link is going to take you to is the federal, Department of Ed's, website on FERPA, and they have everything up there. They have guidance about how FERPA works. They have how to file a FERPA complaint. They have a lot of interesting trainings if you want to take actually a virtual training. And then I just kind of like stole the high points that are available about FERPA, and I could just sort of try to breeze.
Got about 2 minutes. Is 2 minutes okay. Enough time, or you want to wait for next week?
No, I think it's good, and we'll see where we are. Anyway, it's a federal program. As we said, parochial and private schools aren't really subject to it because they don't receive federal funds. It gives, custodial and non-custodial parents rights with regard to their student records. When the student becomes 18, then the student becomes the holder of the FERPA rights. One of the things in FERPA is under the federal law, you have a right to request your students' records, okay, under FERPA, but it's much slower than in California. It's a 45-day process, not a 5-day process or 5 business days. And then the statute basically talks about what they aren't required to do. So, you might want to look at, I could send my cheat sheet if you want, so that if you want to look at what things they aren't required to do or what things they aren't required to disclose to you, you have that available to you. FERPA was intended to require only that schools conform to fair record-keeping practices and not to override the accepted standards and procedures for making academic assessments, disciplinary rulings, or placement determinations. Thus, while FERPA affords parents the right to seek to amend education records which contain inaccuracies, this right cannot be used to challenge a grade. An individual's opinion or substantive decision made by a school about a student cannot be challenged under FERPA. Additionally, if FERPA's amendment procedures are not applicable to a parent's request for amendment of education records, the school is not required under FERPA to hold a hearing on the matter. So in that case I talked to you about, we were proceeding under FERPA because we were asking them to fix her friggin' online file and they wouldn't do it. They left it up. So that's one of the ways that people use FERPA, is they use it to challenge inaccuracies in educational records. But you're hearing here that is not going to mean you can do a grade challenge, which if people ever want to show on how to do a grade challenge, we can do one. But you can't use FERPA for that. And it just keeps going in terms of what they can disclose, who they can disclose to, that they have a requirement to give parents notice of their FERPA rights. That's usually going to be in the procedural safeguards that you get at the IEP, and so on. I mean, I'll send you my cheat sheet, and you guys can look at my cheat sheet, my FERPA okay. cheat sheet. That's what I'm reading.
We are unfortunately out of time, but we so appreciate you and we'll continue this conversation. And we want to remind everybody that you're with the Tolner Law Offices, and that if they are in California, they should reach out to the Tolner Law Offices in Southern or Northern California.
Or Central,
that's true. And if you're not in California and you're looking for legal assistance, Bonnie has a website that she recommends. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, COPAA.net. That's a 50-state database of special ed attorneys that I think are, good, committed, reputable people that are doing this for the right reason. Now, I do want to say that I think it's a really good way to learn about the IDEA if we talk about individual scenarios. So that means you guys have to send me for next week your individual scenarios, like what okay. you what you had, what you got offered, what happened, where you're at now, what you want to do. That would okay. be helpful for other people, even if their facts are different.
All right. I was just sort of blending them all together, but I can separate them out and send them to you. Not a problem. Bonnie, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Anytime. All right.
Take care.
Okay.
We're over time, but I'm just going to take a second here to go back through some of the things. And then I got one of those pop-up windows. I just hate that. And it won't go away on its own. Okay. So I want to go through some of the comments that we didn't get to, because some of them were super important. Hang on. Let me see if I can get it to do it. I just hate this thing. Go away. Okay, it went away. And of course, it took me to the window. I just hate it. Okay, now I'm back. All right. So I told the person who wanted me to email them, please email me, s.penrod@autism-live.com. Pizza Lover One says, I don't like wearing a mask. So when I wear a mask, I eat an ice cream when I get home. There's your reward. There's the consequence for it. And it's maintaining that behavior. Somebody answered the question of the day. What do they do to reward themselves for good behavior? They said, I stay up a little bit and watch Disney Plus after a long day taking care of everyone. Good for you. And they take a little R&R. Sarabjit says making it fun, great advice. Kristen said yes. Good morning, Tammy, saying good morning to you. And Stephanie, I want you to know that we do what Traven, our producer, is able to see the comments on Facebook and on YouTube. And what he does is he aggregates them and sends them to me. So there's a little bit of a lag. But I do get to see both. Helen says we're in the UK and we have an exemption card. Nita says, what are important resources for learning more about autism? Autism is this big subject, so it depends on what you want to learn. If you are a caregiver and you want to learn about biomedical or diet or anything, you know, having to do with that, I would go to other than here. I would go to TACA, TACANOW.org. We're going to have the founder of TACA on the show tomorrow. If you have even a preteen or a teenager or an adult on the spectrum, or you are a teenager, preteen or an adult on the autism spectrum, I would encourage you to go to wrongplanet.net. That is a great resource. I think between those two websites, TACA and wrongplanet.net, you'll find a lot. Like, I could send you to those two places and you could come back in 2 years and tell me that you still hadn't gotten to the bottom of those websites. But I will tell you that I think that we're a great resource too. Peggy wants to know, can someone with 27 years of hands-on experiment go on here live? Anyone can pitch an idea to me. Write to me at s.penrod@autism-live.com. Many people have done that and ended up being a guest on the show. Tell me what you would like to talk about and give me your talking points and your availability, and let's see if we can work that out. Jacinda says, I love you guys. Always give me strength in navigating the school system. I'm so glad to hear that, because that means a lot. Pizza Lover One says, I'm concerned about other states. And we try to give you information about, you know, a little bit about everywhere. Everything is so different right now. We're saying hi to Sapphire. I'm good, Sapphire. I hope that you're good. Jacinda says, heartbreaking. I know. I'll be giving those people's information out. MW says, gobsmacked, LOL. I was raised by British teachers, so I love that term. What are important resources for learning about autism? Hopefully I've answered that. And Nasser says, hi. So there might be more recent comments, but I wanted to at least address those, you guys. Thanks for writing in. It's so much more fun for me when you guys are interactive with us. That's to me is joy. Don't forget, tomorrow we're going to be hitting that distance learning from the point of research. What does research say works? What doesn't work? What do we need to know? We need to arm ourselves with this. I'm so excited for this tomorrow. And then Lisa Ackerman will be joining us from TACA. Until then, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you too. Bye-bye for now.